Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye, Rose, is the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 on News Radio 92.3. Happy Friday to you. Parade's tomorrow. Come join us for the Pensacola Grand Parade. 5:30 is roll time. Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays here on News Radio, and also the founder of the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow them on Facebook, watch movies, and talk about it. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. You can also see Pensacon in the parade tomorrow.
Oh, nice. And you guys made a big announcement this week. You've got the Connor sisters are going to be here, right? Sarah Gilbert and...
Yeah. And Lacey Goranson, yeah, that's correct. Becky and Darlene from the Connors and Roseanne. Of course, they've also both done a bunch of other stuff as
right.
well. So come out and see them and a whole lot of other your favorite stars. We're going to have another big announcement later this morning. So,
okay.
Tis the season.
Outstanding. I love to see everybody dressed up for the Pensacon float. That's good stuff. Movie of the week is Dust Bunny and?
I absolutely love this movie. So this is from Brian Fuller, who is... probably best known for his TV work. He was the creator and main writer for Pushing Daisies and Hannibal and a number of other series. He's known for doing these very interesting projects that sometimes have a little bit more of an esoteric appeal. They
sure.
don't necessarily always appeal to mainstream audiences.
We loved Pushing Daisies. So
yeah, that may be true. Well, so all right. So imagine, if you will, Pushing Daisies mixed with The Professional.
Okay.
And that's kind of where you're going with this movie. This
Interesting.
Is about a little girl who is hires a hitman, who is her neighbor, to kill the monster under her bed.
I love this premise. Okay.
Yeah.
All
and
right.
Of course, you know, you spend a lot of the movie questioning whether the monster is real or not.
Right.
The monster
yeah.
has eaten her parents. The hitman is played by Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, okay.
Of course, worked with Brian Fuller and Hannibal. Great supporting cast with Sigourney Weaver and David Dastmalchian. And it's funny. It's scary. It's got a lot of action. I really love this movie. I don't know that it's going to appeal to everybody, but it's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Well, sounds fun. I'm eager. Don't tell me anymore. I'm eager to. You got me. I'm sold. I want to watch it.
Well, I do want to just say that the critics do like it, too. It's running about 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's not just me. I recognize that Brian Fuller is, you know, a creator that is kind of like one of that I just have a lot of love for.
Yeah.
But it's not just me. Other people like
gotcha.
It,
gotcha. Ella McKay, obviously no relation. but this is a political comedy, right?
And yeah, like a political, like, but it's more focused on the life of the lead character, who is a lieutenant governor who is about to become the governor of her state because the governor is taking a cabinet position. This is written and directed by James L. Brooks, who, of course, has a great pedigree with, you know, films everything from Terms of Endearment to Broadcast News to
okay.
As Good as It Gets. You know, great, great history of great work, The Simpsons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Witty dialogue, typically good character development, all the stuff you expect. So, okay. All right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the last couple of films he's made as a director have not set the world on fire, and this one doesn't appear to be either.
Okay.
20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, that's a
really disappointing.
That's a below the threshold for us. We don't watch things that are below 40 and usually not below 50. Silent Night, Deadly Night. Is this a sequel? What is this?
So this is a remake. Silent Night, Deadly Night, there's a series of these movies that were done in the 80s.
Okay.
Christmas horror movie about a guy who dresses up in Santa and goes out, kills people, basically.
What was the David Harbour one? What was the name of that one?
That was Violent Night.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha.
Yeah, that was more recent. Silent Night, Deadly Night it's really a cult series. They were considered very shocking in the time. There are... from a strictly qualitative standpoint, not very good, but
good.
But they are kind of cult classics. I personally love them. The most infamous, of course, is the second one with the one of the best line readings of all time in any movie, where the killer is walking down the street and he sees a guy taking out the garbage and he says, "Garbage day," and then he shoots him. It's just ridiculous. Absolutely
all right.
ridiculous.
That kind of movie. So, is this in that genre? Is it any good?
So the fact that they're remaking this movie was interesting to me. Even more interesting is that apparently they've actually made it a good movie because it's 84% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's huge.
So
okay.
I'm very intrigued by this now.
Almost out of time, not without hope.
Also, not without hope, but without reviews. This is a film about apparently a boating accident that was supposedly very famous in 2009 that I never heard of, despite it taking place off the coast of Tampa, where I grew up, with a bunch of football players and a boat that capsizes. And it's not screened for critics. It stars Zachary Levi. Do the math.
Okay, gotcha. What are you going to watch next week?
There's actually a lot coming out next week. It's, of course, the weekend before Christmas. Can you believe we're almost there
already? I know.
Already?
Crazy, right?
Of course, the big one is Avatar, Fire, and Ash. So
right.
That's probably the most likely, but there's a lot of big stuff coming out next week. So.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to recapping before the holiday. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock here on Saturdays on News Radio, and also the founder of the Pensacola Movie Club. Follow them, see what they're watching, and watch good movies with them. Julio, as always, thanks for the time, and we'll look forward to the Pensacon announcement coming up this morning.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
8:15 on News Radio 92.3. Marco Rubio gets canceled. Find out why. Coming up next in the Transgressors Memorial Service, or the Woe Unto All Who Offend the Late Service. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. Are you hungry? Well, Apple Market Deli's got you covered. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Fresh, affordable, and delicious. Apple Market, 1021 Scenic Highway in Pensacola. Still rolling accident-free right now. There's nothing really that's going to slow you down. I-10, I-110, everything is looking good this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Whether you want to start your education or advance your career, Pensacola State College is the place for you. Join the 92% of PSC students who graduate loan-free and select from over 100 programs ranging from cosmetology and plumbing to nursing and aviation airframe mechanics. In addition, Pensacola State has over 300 scholarships to choose from, including cybersecurity. Register today for spring semester. Go to PensacolaState.edu. Go here. Get there.
6,000 children depend on your compassion this holiday season. WEAR-TV's Communities Caring at Christmas brings dignity and joy to vulnerable families in our community. Give online at CommunitiesCaringAtChristmas.com or deliver new unwrapped toys to WEAR-TV, Sandy Sansing Dealerships, or News Radio 92.3. Your donation supports foster children, children in poverty, and adults with developmental disabilities. Please support Communities Caring at Christmas.
Ballet Pensacola presents the return of the beloved holiday classic, The Nutcracker. And Debbie Janae, the choreographer and academy director, and Trevor Williams, the Nutcracker Prince, are the guests on Pep Talk, Monday at 10. This year's Nutcracker has all new choreography, new costumes, and a production that Pensacola can call its own. The Nutcracker, December 19th through the 21st, for 5 performances at the Sanger Theater. Tickets are at the box office or online at Ticketmaster.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Hi, this is David Wayne, and I just want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
From all of us to all of you, Merry Christmas.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the color standards company Pantone, founder of the Pantone matching system and bringer of order to the universe of design, printing, fashion, and manufacturing through systemic palette categorization and naming protocols. As they have done since the millennium, Pantone each year selects a color of the year to give a sense of identity and guidance to the tone of visual experience and to spark a conversation about the link between color and global culture. They boldly offered their first color of the year, cerulean, in 2000, representing the restful, peaceful, and relaxing color of a serene sky. They followed boldly with fuchsia rose in 2001, a bright, feel-good, passionately feminine, intense pink. Then 2002, true red for love and power, deep and strong. We experienced aqua sky, tiger lily, blue turquoise, sand dollar, chili pepper, blue iris, and then in 2009, a bold choice, mimosa, the sweet color of day drinking. Then followed actual turquoise, honeysuckle, tangerine tango with its heat and energy, emerald, radiant orchid, and all the subversive feminism of 13th wave lesbianism. Then another wine color, Marsala, then rose quartz, and serenity shared the throne in 2016, a beautifully blended duality. then Greenery, Ultraviolet, Living Coral, Classic Blue, followed by another joint nomination for the Vivacious Illuminating Yellow and the equally unvivacious Ultimate Gray. Then Very Perry and Uplifting Periwinkle as the world emerged from COVID-19 pandemic in 2022. Then Viva Magenta, guiding us into experimentation and self-expression without restraint. The boundless optimism and joy of a world set free. Then Peach Fuzz and Mocha Mousse, colors that sequentially hinted at harmony possible in a world of racial variety. Harmony, that is, until this year. Yes, after 25 years of sturdy, helpful, careful stewardship of the important responsibility of global color guidance, Pantone made a terrible mistake for this year, Cloud Dancer. Yes, Cloud Dancer, or have some have noted, well, white.
Pantone just announced their color of the year for 2025, and they chose white. In this political climate, are we being serious right now? If not a dog whistle, why does it look like a dog whistle?
What Pantone called a symbol of calm in a hectic society, others have noted, mostly white women, have noted that it is a thinly veiled racism, taken at face value, claiming that white is calming implies that non-white is risky, unsettling, and dangerous.
It's a political statement. You're going to choose white and market it as a soothing reset? For who, babe? Who is that soothing?
Far from promoting inclusion and diversity, Pantone has now officially stamped 2026 as the year of whiteness, a choice that reeks of white supremacy culture.
Pantone choosing white or cloudy days as color of the year is a political statement. Call me too woke, I don't care. I don't think I'm wrong. It is a political statement. It's giving Sydney Sweeney has good genes.
No, babe. There's no such thing as being too woke. And you're absolutely right that nobody wants you to be giving Sydney Sweeney, except perhaps your husband. So for truly failing the one obligation of all inclusivity mandates to never include whiteness in your inclusiveness, Pantone, we hereby remove you from the official rainbow of fruit colors. You are scraped off the palette, and we will find someone else to tell us what the global organizing color of the year will be from now on. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, we are once again forced to cancel something President Never Say His Name did. This week, the unnameable one's Department of Health and Human Services performed a vile, atrocious, mean-spirited, and offensive assault on the gender dignity of former Health and Human Services Secretary Admiral Rachel Levine. Yes, anyone walking down the hallway of the 7th floor of the Humphrey Building in Washington, D.C. can peruse the portraits of all former secretaries of HHS. And as you all know so well, dear Othren, Admiral S. Levine was the first openly transgender cabinet member under the presidency of dear Uncle Joe, backrubber-in-chief and good-natured purveyor of unwanted therapeutic massage. In any case, because the Say Not His Name administration denies the existence of transgenderism, Secretary Levine's portrait has now been defaced by placing the name she was given at birth underneath the glass on her official portrait. That's right, they actually printed, and I really hate to say it because of the pain which saying it causes her and us, Richard, on her portrait, but that is what makes this so horrid. We'd been doing such a good job of expunging her former references that both the NPR article on the subject and even her Wikipedia page do not mention her aforementioned dead name on her birth. We have so thoroughly promulgated the most high and holy doctrine of gender anarchy that people are actually afraid of being canceled themselves just for mentioning a dead name. It's vital that we all pretend former named persons never existed. Of course, Caitlyn Jenner won the men's decathlon in 1976. And we never say the name she used at that time because she was actually a woman then, one of the greatest triumphs of a female athlete in history. Of course, Elliot Page, my mistake, don't cancel me, was always a man, even when he was presenting as a woman and being nominated for Best Actress for the role of a pregnant teenager in Juno. He was always really Elliot, which is part of what made the acting such an accomplishment. And Lily and Lana Wachowski were always the Wachowski sisters, even when they were directing the Matrix movies and Cloud Atlas under the false semi-dead name Wachowski Brothers, which we feel very uncomfortable saying. We have been totally winning on the anti-dead naming front. Until now. And because our movement has been so effective at erasing the past and denying that Rachel was ever identified male at birth, it was that much more offensive when this malicious graffiti was put over her picture, thus denying her gender identity, doing violence to her personhood, and willfully unrevising our historical revision. And look, the reason this practice is so wrong is that it means there are no limits on who can change anything about the past they disagree with. Just imagine some future female president who is a devout feminist opposes giving women their husbands' names. And so she considers married names to be illegitimate artifacts of patriarchal oppression and as a result decides to change all the names of all the portraits of all the married women in leadership throughout American history reverting them back to their proper maiden names, as is only right in an egalitarian society that doesn't require women to submerge their identities into that of their husbands. Although we agree, we also disagree. Even when they're wrong for doing so, women should be allowed to control their own names, and so should Admiralette Levine. It is not up to others to resurrect another's dead name, whether gender mistaken or maiden born. And so for this atrocity against human dignity and autonomy, we cancel the Department of Health and Human Services. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, we come to the most important cancellation of the day. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, for his utterly incomprehensible decision to launch the great font wars of 2025. Yes, this week in a memo, Rubio explained that he was reversing the decision by former Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who changed the official typeface of the State Department from Times New Roman to Calibri in order to make documents easier to read for the visually impaired. By opting for a non-serif font, without the small flares that can be distracting to the eye, he was signaling a world of inclusion and comfort, trying to make official government documents more accessible to all. Then, in a horrifying cultural reversion, Rubio wrote in a memo, to restore decorum and professionalism to the department's written work products and abolish yet another wasteful DEIA program, the department is returning to Times New Roman as its standard typeface. He added that the previous switch to Calibri has achieved nothing except the degradation of the department's official correspondence, and a State Department spokeshuman further clarified that serif fonts are used by the White House, Supreme Court, and other state and federal government entities and are generally perceived to connote tradition, formality, and ceremony. And thus Times New Roman, with all its flair, has replaced Calibri as the standard typeface of state. But this will not do, dearly beloved Otheran. The decision here could not be more stark. This administration is fully rejecting the needs of the proletariat and embracing the aristocratic impulses of the czars. Rubio wants dignity and elegance and formality. Do you not see that serif-based typefaces are the gatekeepers of white supremacy culture? Do you think it's a mistake this typeface was designed by a British man, Victor Lardent? For the Times of London? Not even an American typeface from the man who supposedly wants to make fonts great again. Our president might think of himself as American royalty, but certainly his Secretary of State could have selected a typeface that was at least designed by an American. There were so many good options in non-serif fonts. If not Calibri, the most tofu of all typefaces, thrilling to nobody, tasting to the eye like unflavored bean curd, then perhaps Roboto, when you want to declare a profound lack of personality, empty of anything authentic or human. Or Railway, with all the distinctiveness of a ream of recycled paper. Or Futura, as blocky and brutalist as it sounds. Or Montserrat, an elegant name for a purely boring font. Or Helvetica, the preferred typeface of international socialism since 1957. Any of these would have been fine, for these are the fonts of the future, the fonts of equality, the gray, monotonous fonts of equity without diversity, the triumph of despair, the safe, sturdy gruel of a typeface rendered as uninteresting as the people who use it, a triumph of the common man, prescient of a future where all fonts are equal, but some are more equal than others. So keep your white male aristocracy and all of its serif trappings in a vain and artificial effort to preserve the patriarchy by preserving the serifarchy. Keep your Times New Roman away from our egalitarian society. Keep your Playfair display and your Georgia, your Rockwell and your Merriweather. We don't need no Garamond or Baskerville with all their flair and elegance and formality, their serifier-than-thou pretentiousness. We humans of the future will rest comfortably in the bland visual functionality of our lifeless Ariels and Tahomas. So no, Mr. Rubio, we reject your effort to revitalize the typeface of tyranny, the eye candy of the oligarchy and its gold-plated excesses. You can have my sans-serif fonts when you pry them from my cold, dead keyboarding fingers. We are all sans-serif now. Ich bin ein Calibrier. Whose fonts? Our fonts. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal. And go forth and transgress no more.
Okay, I have a dare for you. Go back and listen to that last one and look up each of the fonts as I'm talking about them, and you'll see that the descriptions are actually accurate of what those fonts bring to mind you see them. Yeah, I didn't just make all that up. I mean, I didn't make any of it up. John Pickens has traffic on the five. John?
That's right. We're still rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110, 90, 98, even Highway 29 all look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning, Andrew. Well, let me just collect myself after that, okay? That
was... Are you part of the serifarchy? Are you serifier than thou?
I, I am not serifier than thou.
The irony is I'm an Arial guy. I don't even like the Times New Roman particularly. I like Arial. Go ahead. But I hate Courier. Or not Courier, Calibri.
Well, a judge will rule on the public's ability to view the trial of the man accused of killing Charlie Kirk. Tyler Robinson making his first in-person appearance in court yesterday. Lawyers on both sides are still trying to decide if transcripts from a closed-door hearing should be released, and they also discussed a gag order and media access for future hearings. Boy, it's cold in the Midwest. Another blast of Arctic air hitting there this weekend, bringing freezing temperatures across a lot of the country, and tens of thousands evacuated in Washington State. They're still dealing with all that flooding, heavy rain there. That's expected to crest later today. Over 30 highways are closed, and officials have evacuated thousands of residents.
I don't know if I'm going to feel proud or bad about this after I do it, but you know what Antony Blinken's theme song should have been? I shot the sheriff.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
All right, the rap's coming up next. It'll be fine. We'll get there eventually. Happy Friday.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley.
We are all Kilmer.
Protesting in the dark as Kilmer Abrego Garcia arrived for an early morning Baltimore ICE check-in, the day after a district judge released the so-called Maryland man from ICE custody as he continues fighting deportation to Africa or Costa Rica. The illegal migrant also charged with human smuggling in Tennessee. The media are warned by a Utah judge no more mistakes, like showing the shackles on the suspected Charlie Kirk assassin, Tyler Robinson, at his first court hearing Thursday, or he'll ban cameras from court. The 22-year-old seen smiling and joking with his lawyer at the pretrial hearing. President Trump signs an executive order on artificial intelligence limiting how states can make their own regulations and embed AI with their own biases. And a Hard Rock betting survey finds a quarter of Americans plan their Christmas around sports. Football still tops. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne, and it is 43 degrees right now. We've got clear skies here across the area. We'll get to our full forecast with Brooke Richardson. That's on the way here in just a few minutes. Pensacola City Council yesterday pulling a major redevelopment contract for the old Baptist Hospital as community members expressed some concerns about gentrification and displacement. The neighborhoods around Baptist, the old Baptist, are predominantly black, but like many other areas of the city, homes there now are selling for 3 to 4 times what they did a decade ago.
Gentrification doesn't happen in broad daylight. It happens in closed-door meetings with based on lies, peddled as promises, after deals are already cut.
And census data shows that Pensacola's black population has declined about a third over the last two decades, from 30% in 2000 to just over 21% in 2023. Councilman Delarian Wiggins heard the concerns and ultimately pulled that contract, the city working with the community before they move forward. That's not the only controversy last night at the council meeting. Another packed debate over Drag Queen Christmas. More than 35 people spoke on that topic over 2 hours. One resident describing attending a similar drag queen show out of state.
There were no drag queens running around the streets, as you've been made out to believe. There was no use of the word Christ at all, none, zero during the show. There was no mockery of Christmas. There was no nudity. There was no exposing of genitals, as has been said by many that have been here before. And there was no lewd and lascivious behavior.
Everything that Drag Queen Christmas stands for is sin. It's anti-God and anti-Christ in every way.
And Stephen McCollum there at first, and then Andrew Johnson representing opposite sides of that argument. The show is still set for December 23rd at the Sanger Theater. The controversy, of course, has been ongoing since late summer. WSRE-TV Foundation has filed a federal lawsuit, that is, against Pensacola State College. Now, they claim the college is trying to seize millions of dollars in donor funds. The foundation filed the lawsuit after PSC cut ties with WSRE's PBS affiliation and then demanded control of the donations for college operations. According to the complaint, PSC tried to access the foundation's bank accounts and intercept checks from donors. And the foundation says those dollars were given specifically to support public television programming. Pensacola man's been sentenced to 5 years in prison for cyberstalking and sending obscene materials to minor females. Charles Schmaltz used more than, officials say, used more than 10 social media accounts to contact girls between the ages of 9 and 15. The victims and their parents say they repeatedly told him to stop, but Schmaltz sent them sexually explicit content. A multi-agency investigation involving North Florida and South Alabama law enforcement led to his arrest. After his arrest, Schmaltz will be on probation for 5 years, and he'll have to comply with sexual offender treatment. It is 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives this morning with John Pickens.
That's right. Brought to you by Knox Pest Control, their family serving your family since 1929. For information on free pest or termite quote, visit knoxpest.com. Knox knocks them out. Still reporting no accidents right now, nor delays. Everything is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. And it is 43 degrees. Sunshine this morning. Let's get a check on our forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be looking at some lovely weather today with mostly sunny skies, high near 71 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 56. Heading into Saturday, plenty of sunshine with a high near 71 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 51. Heading into Sunday, we do have some early morning showers, 20% chance of rain in those morning hours. Then temperatures fall near 58 degrees for that high. As you go into Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 29. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It's 43, sunshine. Our next news in 30 minutes. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. And your money now this hour. Taking a look at the markets following the opening bell on Wall Street. The Dow up about 0.2% this morning at 48,790.81, but it's a mixed open. S&P is down just under 0.1% at 68.96, and the NASDAQ is down about 0.25% this morning at 23,533.308. 10-year bond rate is up a bit at 2.86% this morning. Gold prices are up 43.76.80. Silver up just about 29 cents right now at 64.87. And Bitcoin is up just under 1,000 this morning at 92.468. Well, Saturday night's Powerball drawing will be worth $1 billion. Nobody's matched all six numbers yet after Wednesday night's already massive drawing. So the jackpot jumped up again, bringing the cash option up to $461 million. The House of Representatives has overturned one of President Trump's executive orders.
The Republican-controlled House voted 231-195 on Thursday to repeal an order that Trump signed in March ending union rights at federal agencies. The bipartisan measure would restore collective bargaining for nearly 1 million federal workers. The administration argued that restricting union rights was necessary to protect national security. The measure now has to pass the Republican-controlled Senate. I'm Michael Kastner.
Thank you very much, Michael. More Americans are filing for first-time unemployment assistance. The Labor Department reporting yesterday that it received 236,000 initial requests in the week ending December 6th. That is more than the 223,000 analysts had been expecting, and it marks an increase of more than 40,000 claims over the weeks prior. OpenAI taking the wraps off of its latest AI model as competition is heating up. GPT 5.2 is now out in three different levels, designed to handle varying degrees of complexity. In other OpenAI news, users will soon be able to use Disney characters on Sora. The two companies announced a three-year licensing deal that will allow users to generate short-form videos on the AI platform using more than 200 Disney, Marvel, Pixar, and Star Wars characters. It's 8:38. Our next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Christmas?
I'm Charlie Brown. I can tell you what Christmas is all about.
Hi, this is Mary Hoxing. Merry Christmas, Pensacola. As we gather with family and friends this Christmas season, may your hearts be filled with joy and your homes with laughter. Wishing you all peace, love, and warmth from our family to yours. Merry Christmas.
Hi, I'm Front Desk Tina, and I'm wishing you and yours a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Santa Claus is coming to town. Ho, ho, ho.
I said a hip hop, the hip, hip hop, you don't stop. Rap.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Commissioner Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's where we talk about the events of the week or whatever happens to come up with friends in studio. Josh Newby, the executive director of the Council on Aging West Florida. Craig Heinzman, the community outreach pastor for Marcus Point Baptist Church. United again. They've both done this so many times that they've been with each other several times in the over the course of the years. So it's good stuff.
Josh, one of my favorite people in the world.
Oh, he is. Honestly. And you guys were together yesterday for LEAP, right?
That's right. Leadership Pensacola, Community Outreach Day. Craig did a great job.
And Josh is leading the entire charge for Leadership Pensacola this year. So
no big deal.
Are you the organizer?
I am the curriculum chair this
year.
Wow. Yes, Ruthie Noel is my co-chair.
Huge Ruthie's job. The best.
It's a good team.
That's great.
And they're doing amazing. It's a great class this year.
It really is. Yeah, phenomenal.
So. You have an event coming up this weekend at the church?
Yeah, Spirit of Christmas. Granger Smith, country music star, is going to be there. So service is 10 o'clock at the Pensacola campus, and then 10:30 at all of our other satellite campuses.
Nice. And by the way, for those who don't know, I always try real hard to make sure that new people get included and we don't run through things that people won't know. Leadership Pensacola, LEAP, is, and Leadership Santa Rosa is very good too. I did that as well. But that's a chance for people to, for a year, once a month, you get together and you learn things about your community. And more importantly, I think you make connections with other, you know, developing and aspiring professionals. And I mean, I've said this many times, Leadership Pensacola was probably the best thing I ever did coming to Pensacola, and all the, you know, now dear lifelong friends of people like, you know,
Josh Newby.
Amanda
Heinzman. Were you in my class? Amanda Heinzman,
your wife.
Y'all
in our class.
Y'all were
in
Amanda's
class.
Joking. Yep. Tommy Leiter. Sorry. I mean, everybody. Yeah, yeah. Brett Aldridge and, you know, Will. Yes. Great. If you have an opportunity to do it, I strongly recommend.
Applications in January.
Nominations open in January.
Yep.
Can we talk? I do want to talk briefly about the font war, because
I didn't even know it was a thing until your thing. I did not know that we were warring over fonts.
This guy's not plugged into the font forums.
Tell me I'm wrong. There's zero chance that Marco Rubio came up with this. This is 100% a Trump-imposed thing.
I like the idea of little Marco in his home, typing away, thinking about the heart of scene, and being a little design head in his off times. Going to the Reddit, the font subreddits.
No.
I like that idea. Who's going to the font subreddits?
Certainly not me. But politicians are allowed to have little pet interests. I like to think it is. It humanizes
people. Okay, I view this in an entirely different way. I view this as President Trump, who likes to have his hand in everything. He wants to influence everything from the architectural design of Washington, D.C. to the new arch they want to build on the vacant lot across the bridge from the back of the Lincoln Memorial to, you know, the gold plating to the rebuilding. He sees himself as the Renaissance man. He wants to fix it all, make it all, reshape it all in the image of himself, right? Even with the names, whether it's the Kennedy Center or anything else. And so one day he's reading something and he's like, what in the hell font is that? What do you call those stupid little things that they put on the letters? Serifs? Bring me back the serifs. Get little Marco in here.
Little
and then Marco's
Marco.
Like, yes, sir. And he's like, I want you to fix this font for me. Sir, what? Make it time. What was it before?
I actually think
and
it's something
Marco,
completely different.
And Marco, in his
different.
Heart, like, just wilting and thinking,
This is what I got to do to make the man happy. I completely disagree.
I don't believe it came from the top. I believe it came from underneath, inside the State Department. I believe there is a secretary or somebody who's been typing for 30 years.
Yeah.
And she's done Times New Roman for 25 years, and then all of a sudden it got changed, and she goes, doggone it, before I leave, we are going back.
I vow.
This is not American.
She's not trying to go back to the days of Courier before George W. Bush.
Yes, heaven forbid.
2004, he went to Times New Roman.
It's a dark time.
And she says, I have been laboring under this pain now for 21 years.
It's Eunice or something. That's her name. And she's got the big glasses.
She's
retiring
in January.
This is it. By golly, it's happening.
I like your idea, though, Andrew, because I'm a millennial. Every millennial out there has a baby boomer boss
who will call them into their office
and
explain what this font is. Open this PDF. How do I make this picture bigger? And I like the idea of baby boomer Trump calling a younger Marco Rubio into his office.
Explain this to me, please.
He's got his son for that. He doesn't need Marco Rubio.
Why does this look like a poster for the Marxists? What are you doing to me here?
Oh, my goodness.
Although
I will say your listing of fonts was...
Thank you.
Anyone who works in publications was instantly laughing because we all know the struggle.
I really hit the Helvetica, big niche though. Market of people who really know what these fonts are.
Oh, yeah.
And the you know what the irony is? I love Arial. I'm not a Times New Roman guy at all. I don't like the serifs. Vanilla. I think they just...
I hate Arial.
Okay.
Well, like, there we go. Take a stand, Andrew. Take a stand.
I took a stand for simplicity. Hey, okay. Can I say it this way? Many times I have to be able to stand up and hold a piece of paper and read, or at my computer, I've got to be able to read it. So quickness of character recognition is vital for me. I don't need to be distracted by those little appendages, you know, those little hyper anti-feminist add-ons. I just need to be able to read it. And so in years, I have discovered that I need to go up a size, you know.
What are you rocking, a 14?
If it's print and I'm doing a speech, it's a 12.
Okay.
I've not had to go to the 14.
All right,
really?
On my computer, it's an 11.
How old are you now?
I'm 54.
Wow.
Yeah,
I'm 48 and I'm rocking 14.
By the way, the official typeface, just I cannot believe we're talking about this so much, but the official typeface had been 15 point Calibri, genuinely invented by a Dutch guy. 15 point was under Blinken, yeah. And now under Rubio, it's 14 point Times New Roman. They went back to the old style and to the smaller font. So, all right, John Pickens has got traffic on the 5. John?
Wow. Okay. Let's see here. We've got one accident on the books at 98 and Tiger Point Boulevard. That's 98 westbound as you approach the Garcon Point Bridge. But other than that, things look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
So you know how somebody can say a thing that makes you see a whole topic differently? Jon Stewart on Monday. Did you guys watch The Daily Show on Monday by chance?
I did not.
Okay. Yeah. Basically what he was saying is, you know, if you remember the ramp up to Iraq, weapons of mass destruction threatening Americans, fentanyl threatening Americans,
my God.
Dictators who look the same, dictators who have the same mustache, the same body style, it'll be easy. It'll be over quickly. We will overwhelm them with shock and awe, you know, and plus Trump, of course, is, you know, anti-interventionist, isolationist. He hates the neocons. And here we are talking about, what, nation building in Venezuela in order to grab oil that Iraq also had. I mean, like, almost every element of it lines up, including the pre-war staging. And, yeah, and, you know, Jon Stewart's making the point. He's like, we've seen this before.
Yeah.
And I can't argue with anything he's saying. I don't know what our pretext is. I don't know what the argument is. They haven't made the case. It's just we can.
There could be one, but again, we don't know it. And that's the problem. I mean, Republican, certainly, someone conservative, but part of that is you have to understand there's a rule of law.
Do you?
You should.
I mean, I do.
We should.
But do we?
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. I'm not cool with just, I think they're bad. Let's just blow them out of the water. I personally can't get behind that.
I'm the same.
Do I think we have a major problem? Are we confiscating more drugs right now? You know, Coast Guard's confiscating.
Or destroying.
Both, yeah. Am I down for making sure that crap doesn't reach the shores? Absolutely. How we do that's really, really vital. It's very vital because it's all about precedent.
It's almost like you believe both in ends and means as mattering ethically. What are you, a pastor or something?
It's crazy.
Well, not only that, but like, yes, fentanyl is a problem, but you've got... Oh my God, I could say so much about this. There's no guiding ethos here. You're possibly committing war crimes on these Venezuelan drug boats, right? But then Trump pardons Juan Orlando Hernandez.
Right, who brought in, was it seven? Was it 400 or 700
cocaine,
tons, tons or whatever? Yeah.
For decades, family has been just embroiled in the drug trade. I mean, arguably one of the largest cartels on the globe. Bribery, corruption, you name it.
Well, no. He was framed by the Department of Justice under Biden.
And Hernandez...
It was all a misunderstanding.
Hernandez throws Trump a compliment, and all of a sudden, where's the concern over cocaine trafficking?
I agree.
So there's no guiding ethos here. I think Pete Hegseth, you know, one thing that I think SNL gets very right is that Pete Hegseth is largely just playing war. He's a man's man that come that struts in there and wants to blow up the boats.
I want to believe better than that.
I don't believe that about Pete.
I think a lot of these folks are very serious about what they're trying to accomplish. Right. Some are more qualified than others to be in the position, but they're working with a president who's very unpredictable. And I agree with you. I think he's very pragmatic. The one thing that saves me about Trump is I know he really in his heart is trying to do what's good for America. I do believe that.
I believe that. But yeah, I don't think
that he respects the rules in any way. If the rules get in the way, then they're the enemy.
You've got the Nobel Peace Prize winner saying, I think he's got to do more.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening from the Venezuela opposition right now. They're saying we're behind this. We're behind everything he's doing.
I mean,
that should at least give us some pause.
Right.
And
the influence of China and South America.
In Venezuela.
Agreed.
We have zero idea
right.
how crazy it really is over there. And
there's always...
Marco has always been the South America guy. Like,
yes,
from even
always.
Before when he was not in the Senate yet. He's always been very foreign policy oriented. I always thought Secretary of State was a perfect role for him. It was one of the reasons I liked him so much as a presidential candidate, because I thought he was a serious foreign policy guy. And I also have to kind of trust that Marco's very involved in all of this and guiding and shaping and informing. I hope.
And even if there's legitimate reasons, there's legitimate ethos, we got to know.
Tell us.
It's the whole point of the problem, I think, with the Trump administration is it's just a bunch of action that
we could support.
We could support if we knew why, but just action without the reason.
Well, but his excuse is going to be, I can't divulge my strategy. I can't divulge my 3D chess master
plan.
But
he doesn't have to divulge the strategy in order to divulge the justification.
Just the guiding ethos.
Right.
But there's always...
There's the justice of the war and there's the justice of the warfare. He's got to persuade me that the war is just and then do your thing.
There's always going to be a reason and excuse to break the rules. Always, always. The Venezuelan opposition is in favor of this. There's your excuse. No, what sets us apart from our enemies is that we follow the rule of law.
Right.
And I'm sorry,
totally,
but Trump has no respect for it.
Well,
no,
and I will say this. I'm not using the Venezuelan opposition as an excuse, because I don't think there's an excuse. I don't think there's an excuse for just letting loose from what makes America stand out. The democracy and the fact that we've set laws and boundaries for our leadership.
That are frustrating and annoying
and
essential to our identity.
And let's be honest, sometimes they go too far. Sometimes it's just absolute. Anyone that's tried to get anything done in a municipality with a crap ton of rules, you realize this is stupid. I should not have to go through this much.
I shouldn't have to wait 130 days to put out a new RFP, because it just bare minimum takes that long to fix the getting the bathrooms at Veterans Memorial Park.
Oh, gosh.
Or
can we talk?
I mean. You're worked up, Craig. What do you want to say?
Potties,
go on.
Man. Like, seriously, it's
this
potty.
This has been going on for about 10 years.
It's as long as I have lived here, 11
potty.
Years.
It's
yeah.
How? Why? How? What? Dig a hole. Like, put up a... I don't even... Just do something like crazy.
Bring in the veterans to build a latrine. They'll have it done by tomorrow.
That's where... You need me to get a hole? All right, let's do it. But it's
insane.
But that is the frustration I think some people do feel. And they go... We haven't been doing anything about the drug problem for decades. I'm glad someone's doing something about it. So there's the danger. Frustration can lead to the danger of,
absolutely,
I don't care how you do it, just get it done.
This is the history. Like, again,
America,
it's all Plato.
We got to care about get it done and
but
how we get it done and how we get it done.
If you criticized Obama's drone strikes, you need to criticize
right.
This.
That's right.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, that's
accurate.
I mean,
honestly, and I was a very big supporter of Obama during his presidency, but I was harshly critical of that. You need to be harshly critical of this, too.
At least asking questions and wanting information, which has been, you know, sorely lacking. I mentioned it goes back to Plato. The Greeks had it, that eventually every
form of
government...
The Greeks had
Plato? Every form of government that ends up in democracy,
right.
And then after democracy, everything goes haywire because, you know... People are not capable of handling freedom well for the long haul, and problems come, and they ask for a strong man to come in and fix it. And we have clearly voted as a nation to bring in a strong man and fix it. And he's doing what he was elected to do without respect for those rules. Everything is right if it's on his side. Everything is wrong if it's not on his side. And that's scary, because that's not how that's supposed to work. But that's what people are saying is, Well, the alternative is we have this problem. We have the terrorists are taking advantage of our rules, so let's kick them out of the country. Let's, you know, deport everybody. We're going to look at your social media for the last five years before we let you in. Rules, we're just going to get the results. Stick with me. We're going to win against China. We're going to win against Venezuela. We're going to fix the economy. I know the terrorists are destroying everybody's life, but this is what we got. Like, all of it, it doesn't matter what the rules are. It's just get the end result.
I think that stick with me is sort of the famous last words of a democracy.
That's the question. I mean,
just stick with me until you're stuck with me.
That's what we're all looking at. 8:53 on News Radio 92.3. Do you want to talk about the Baptist thing? Did you watch the meeting yesterday?
I didn't get to watch the meeting.
I haven't watched it yet either, so I'm reluctant to weigh in because I was like the.
But I do say that I think that this the firm that was chosen. I mean, again, it's just sometimes it feels like we just throw something out there and we're going, oh yeah. Let that.
See, I don't think that. I think they're, I mean, nobody else, the three other firms applied and they didn't even follow through to the oral. So this is the one that's left. And they're the ones who helped work on the project that's been so pivotal in forming people's imagination about what could happen at Baptist. What's the alternative? If nobody else has applied. And I liked, and Brian Spencer and Travis Peterson are great, you know? I know they're going to, it's not just a company out of what, Mississippi or wherever they're
at. No,
out,
and I love
know?
Brian. But I mean, obviously, it's that. I think the local is not the issue. I think what you're looking at is everyone who's reading the results of New Orleans. And some of that is shocking.
Well, I will say this. I don't know which story to believe. Because one story is that project has been incredibly effective. Mm-hmm. Another story is that project has destroyed the community.
Well, that it depends on
and,
who you ask.
And the people telling me it's destroyed the community are the socialists in town. And I do not trust their account. I'll be honest. I do not try. They show up at wearing the socialist shirt. I know who they are. They're smart people who are incredibly misguided.
Yeah.
And I've listened to them talk over the years, and I don't trust a single account that they're saying. So I don't trust their account. But I don't know for sure on firsthand experience. I know the mayor. Trust the mayor. Mayor's capable. You know, that's.
Oh, yeah.
I know Erica Garen Cagnolo. She's very capable. I don't think that Brian Spencer and Travis Peterson would partner with people who didn't know what they were doing.
No. I wouldn't think Brian would, is for certain. I think that there are troubling stories that have come out of New Orleans, obviously, and out of that community. I think you have to look at the community itself that was affected around it. That's going to be the biggest thing as you go through Baptist is, yes, it's going to change. No matter what, Pensacola is changing. I don't know if you've seen what's going on downtown.
Totally.
What's going up down north. It's changing, guys. And there, those of you that are like, oh, no, we have to keep it the same. That's not happening. I don't care what you do. I don't care who you bring in.
Well, and I talked about this yesterday. I said the whole anti-gentrification position is predicated on, and I said it this way, keep it crappy. Because the best way to avoid gentrification is to never improve something.
That's true.
If you improve it, people want to live there. They'll move in. That drives up property values. That's good for the people who own and bad for the people who want to stay. If you want to sell, what's your solution? You want a great thing, but you don't want the consequences of having a great thing. Pick. You can't have both. So,
well, the alternative is that, and I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you, but the alternative
say
is that
slower.
The developer dollars go elsewhere. That the developer dollars go elsewhere, right? Like, whatever. And go to trash.
I agree.
John
Pickett
says traffic on the fives.
That's right. 98 westbound before you get to the Garcon Point Bridge. We've got an accident causing some minor traffic backups. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
That's so rude to you, Josh. Go ahead.
Go to traffic.
No, let's move on.
Can we go back to 15-point font? Who, what? I'm sorry. I'm still reeling over the fact that it was a 15-point font. Who does an odd number font size?
You've got
80-year-olds in government, and you know
no,
the rule is half
but he's saying you go
age.
With 16. You don't go 9, 10, 16, 11, 14, 13.
You
never go
to, you got to type in 15. It's not even
it's not an
automatic
option.
Choice.
He's right.
Someone typed in 15. That's crazy. That's psychotic.
Well, 14's too small and 16's too big.
I'm done.
Craig?
What was it I said the other day? What is this show about? I don't know. Welcome to Friday. You never know what's going to happen. What was your Spotify age, Josh?
42.
In real life, you're 47?
God. I'm 37.
You're my
young
friend. You're my young,
so young
friend.
He is
I'm
young.
So young. My top artist was Taylor Swift.
Okay.
I have the age of apparently a 42-year-old white woman.
I could have told you that. That's not even a surprise to anybody. When are you transitioning?
I'm in the process, apparently.
It's already on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. Inside.
What do you got,
Craig? The more you listen to Taylor Swift, the more. No. I was 30, but I tricked the algorithm.
What?
I was
You're
30.
In real life 40?
I'm 48.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
all right.
Really
almost
old.
My age.
But yeah, I tricked 30. The algorithm because I listened to.
Did you do it on purpose?
College a cappella groups that sang, you know, contemporary songs, but they're college a cappella groups. So really, I'm probably more in the 60s.
Okay.
If I had to. My
because
son was
you're listening
68.
To a cappella, but because yes, you smuggled acapella. In the music yeah. and lyrics of a right. younger person,
yeah.
I think you're like playing K-pop Demon Hunters or something on zero right. volume while you're sleeping K-pop just to Demon lower Hunter. The average.
You're biasing the algorithm so you can brag about being too young.
Yeah.
So what would be the most Andrew McKay thing you could possibly know about my Spotify age?
Oh, you listen to like Styx or something.
Wow. Why don't you wipe water? Some of that contempt off your lower lip?
The Cars, the Top Gun soundtrack.
No, you're missing an opportunity here, Josh.
Okay.
I do not have a Spotify account.
Oh.
Yawn. What do you use?
Really?
YouTube Music?
CDs.
Still? Or like an actual CD? Do you carry around a briefcase?
No. But I will, you know, albums. I'll listen to albums on YouTube or whatever. I'll listen to whole. I like a whole albums.
Oh, really?
Usually.
You're a whole album guy?
I believe in the album. I believe in the book. I believe in the album. I'm not the short video, brain rock kind of skibbity nonsense. I believe.
I'm not a skibbity guy, but I also know that an album has at least three songs on it that are absolute trash and you shouldn't listen
to. You got to endure a little boredom.
Stream us at News.